The Shore Shame Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Well, shalom, everybody. This is Bill Cloud, and I want to welcome you to this week's Torah tidbit, which is taken from the portion called in Hebrew, Acharei Mot, which means after the death. It's referring to the death of Aaron's sons, Nadab and Avihu, who you will recall offered profane fire before the Lord and then were consumed. And so the Torah portion begins by saying this in Leviticus chapter 16, beginning at verse 1. Now the Lord spoke to Moses after the death, and that would be the term Acharei Mot, after the death of the two sons of Aaron, when they offered profane fire before the Lord and died. And the Lord said to Moses, tell Aaron your brother not to come at just any time into the holy place inside the veil before the mercy seat, which is on the ark, lest he die. For I will appear in the cloud above the mercy seat. And so thus begins our Torah portion, and it begins by introducing to us the most sacred service of the year, that is on the Hebrew calendar, and that is referring to Yom Kippur, or as we know it, the Day of Atonement. And also, it reminds us of the death of Aaron's sons. Perhaps that is to imply some possible connection between their deaths and the Yom Kippur service. Their deaths, of course, were a solemn warning to the high priest, or any priest for that matter, not to enter the holy place or the most holy place at any time and in any way he wished, but they were to follow a certain protocol because they, as priests, were to walk in holiness, in service to a holy God. And so our portion begins what is commonly called in the Hebrew commentary, the Lev HaTorah, or the heart. The Hebrew word for heart is Lev, heart of the Torah. Because in this section of Scripture, holiness and sanctification are going to be the prevailing themes. Of course, holiness is the standard by which you and I are to live, and thus not to desecrate His name, but to sanctify His name. And we do that by doing what He has instructed us to do, abstaining from what He told us not to do. In some cases, this obedience may even require one to give up his life, as we are reminded in the New Testament in Revelation chapter 12. And they overcame him, that is the adversary, by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. And they did not love their lives to the death. And so they put his purposes before their very life. And that is what a life of holiness is about. The word holy is the Hebrew word kadosh. And it refers to separation from or being removed from others. And the implication here is that this separation or this being set apart is because we are living by God's standards. The Torah uses the term holiness in conjunction with three primary areas. Note these: idolatry, immorality, and forbidden foods. The idea is that the person who is able to curb his appetite for these things is on the road to true holiness. Of course, there's always going to be those who cannot or will not, and so they choose to indulge in these things that are unclean, and thus they become contaminated. Now, I wanted to point these three things out because it just so happens that these are the very things that are addressed in Acts chapter 15, as non-Jews begin to come to belief on the Messiah Yeshua and are turning to the God of Israel. There were those who said that these people must be circumcised after the manner of Moses or they wouldn't be saved. Yet James, probably Jacob, and the council at Jerusalem issued this decision, and it was to be sent to all of these people who were turning to God, as it's recorded for us in Acts chapter 15, verse 19. Therefore, I judge that we should not trouble those from among the Gentiles who are turning to God, but that we write to them to abstain from things polluted by idols, that would be idolatry, from sexual immorality, and from things strangled and from blood, that would be forbidden foods. For Moses, or if you will, the Torah, has had throughout many generations those who preach him in every city, being read in the synagogues every Shabbat or Sabbath. So now I think it's very important to understand that these things that James mentions here, he didn't pull these things out of thin air, but actually he called upon his knowledge of the Scriptures and went to the heart of the Torah. Because all of these points and more are found in this Torah portion, Achrimot. This declaration by James implied that these are the standards, that is, abstention from idolatry, from immorality, and forbidden foods. These are the standards that would put these new believers on the road to holy living. Furthermore, because they were attending synagogues every Shabbat, they would obviously learn more of the Scriptures as they continue to hear Moses or the Torah being taught. Now, these three issues are dealt with extensively in our Torah portion here. For instance, in chapter 17, it deals with offerings and the need for these offerings to be free of any kind of idolatrous connection. And this gets classified into two categories. Number one, sacrificing to demons, and the other, eating blood. In the first case, the offerings were not to be sacrificed anywhere but at the door of the Mishkan, or tabernacle. And this included those offerings that were considered to be dedicated to God. After the temple was built in Jerusalem, a bama, or a high place, was not permissible. In fact, anything offered in any way other than what was commanded was to be considered as idolatry. Now, this is to suggest that how I think God should be worshiped doesn't necessarily equate to how God thinks He should be worshiped. What matters is what He says and how He says it should be done. That is what constitutes true worship. Because you see, my freedom to worship my way may not mean that I'm free. To the contrary, if I refuse to follow God's protocol, I may find that my freedom has brought me into bondage to some other spirit. So Israel had been previously warned against contamination with things that were physically unclean. Now he was warning them in this Torah portion against coming in contact with those things that were spiritually unclean. And that is why, ladies and gentlemen, James alluded to this when he was addressing the new converts from around the region. So now, in chapter 18 of this Torah portion, it's the first of two chapters that are going to deal with laws of immorality and laws concerning forbidden relationships. And of course, again, these laws are at the very heart of purity and righteousness. In fact, these are principles which they establish the foundation for social morality. Perhaps that is why the opening words of this particular chapter sound very much like the opening words of the Ten Commandments when God addressed Israel at the mountain. In Leviticus 18, beginning at verse 1, it says this, "Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, I am the Lord your God. According to the doings of the land of Egypt, where you dwelt, you shall not do. And according to the doings of the land of Canaan, where I am bringing you, you shall not do, nor shall you walk in their ways or ordinances." So, if I can summarize it, don't do like the people you were with in Egypt, and don't do like the people that are in Canaan. Do what I tell you to do. So the laws of morality and forbidden relationships are included in the letters of Acts 15 when James warns those new believers to abstain from fornication, forbidden relationships, immorality. But I would also add here that this should be understood to mean much more than just what we consider fornication. I believe that it would also allude to what Paul addressed when he warned that as believers, we were not to be unequally yoked. Here's the way he put it in 2 Corinthians 6. "Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness? And what accord has Messiah with Belial? Or what part has a believer with an unbeliever? In other words, what the early non-Jewish believers were being told, what they were being instructed in this letter of Acts 15, they were told not something new, but they were being told something that had been taught to Israel from the beginning of Israel's history, something that could already be found in the heart of the Torah. Now, when it comes to the issue of blood and forbidden foods, one of the three primary things that we see in this Torah portion, we should consider that the things pertaining to blood and forbidden foods are related. Because blood is considered to be so sacred in Scripture, the slaughter of animals for food, that was taken from the ordinary Israelite, and it was relegated to a group of specially trained men called in Hebrew, shochetim. Because the Hebrew method of slaughter is intended to cause the maximum effusion of blood so that the animal dies instantly without suffering. Furthermore, if there is any remaining blood, it's going to be extracted from the animal by washing and salting the meat. Thus, any blood that is eaten is considered abominable, whether it comes from clean or unclean animals. And here's the reason. Because the life of all flesh is in the blood. Blood is the principal carrier of life and thus is equivalent to life itself, and consequently should be reserved for strictly sacred purposes. The Creator is the one who designated blood as the medium to be placed upon the altar for atonement, and not because He has some desire for blood, but because it represents that man's commitment of heart and, I would add, that man's opportunity to approach a holy God. And so He says in Leviticus chapter 17, 11, I have given it to you upon the altar to make atonement for your souls, for it is the blood that makes atonement for the soul. In other words, the blood is provided for our spiritual welfare and should be consequently considered as being sacred. It's to be treated in a very reverent way, certainly not consumed. Now, considering the fascination that our present culture has with vampires, and to the degree that there is an entire vampire culture that is developed, what does that say about this generation? But anyway, that's probably for another time. But this prohibition against blood, things forbidden, foods, that's one that James mentioned in Acts chapter 15 when he said that believers were to abstain from things strangled and blood, implying then, ladies and gentlemen, that what you eat is important. In other words, don't eat things that might contain blood. This, coupled with the instruction to not pollute yourself with things associated with idols, strongly suggests that James was taking this position because of what he knew from the heart of the Torah. That is what is included in our Torah portion. So we could say that the heart of the Torah is about life and the preservation of life. In fact, the life and the preservation of life supersedes all other commandments, with some exceptions. No man is to save his life at the expense of committing idolatry. An example of this is found in Daniel chapter 3, where we see the three Hebrews, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, prefer death over bowing to an idol. When it comes to forbidden relationships, murder, anything that would desecrate God's name, we're not to do those things in order to preserve our life, because we are called to be holy. And that is God's standard, and that standard must be prevalent in our heart, because that is the heart of the Torah, and that is our Torah tidbit. Shalom.
Like what you're hearing? Become a Bill Cloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BillCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.